Greetings, greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. Well, you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. It is the Weekly Worldview. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. It's the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do help focus you on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. It's good to have everybody back. I want to start with the Back to Reality file. That's right. Back to reality, folks. There are wildfires in Northern California, and it was feared this past week that a grove of old-growth redwoods may finally have succumbed to the fires. This is reality. A fire. You know, like the hurricane down in Texas and Louisiana. Actual reality that you can actually be afraid of legitimately. Well, anyways, back to the fires in Northern California. A reporter and a photographer hiked the Redwood Trail at Big Basin Redwood State Park this past week and has confirmed that most of the ancient redwoods have withstood the blaze. That's right. The redwoods have survived. That's right. That's really all I have from that. I just wanted to say that because I thought that was good news. I thought we needed some good news. And also, if you've never experienced the redwoods up in Northern California, you should go. Because it's one of the few things on the planet that that I went to see. Actually, I and my extremely attractive audio engineer, we went to see the redwoods. And they're one of the few natural wonders that actually lived up to the hype. It's one of those things where you hear about it your whole life, and then you see it, and you're like, eh. But not with the redwoods. No, with the redwoods, when we saw it, we were like, oh, wow, okay, that's bigger than I even thought. I mean, I knew they were big trees. I didn't know they were that big. It was really impressive. And so we're glad that they have survived the fires. There's one tree that they call the Mother of the Forest. This tree used to be 329 feet tall. And, the top of it broke off during a storm, and now a new trunk has sprouted out of the top of the old growth. So you got a combination of old growth and new growth forest there, which, anyway, pretty cool. So the redwoods have survived, and Texas and Louisiana have survived the hurricane, although a number of people were killed. That was a really scary, horrible hurricane. And we're glad that that our neighbors have gotten through it, and we're sad for anyone who's died, but such things have happened throughout all of history. And we've managed to survive and carry on and even strive. Did I say strive? I meant thrive. Well, we managed to strive and thrive and all of that. All right. So I'm watching television, as I'm often wont to do, which I probably shouldn't do. It's probably unhealthy at this point. But for whatever reason, the DVR was not caught up with the, you know, we couldn't pause things. So we end up watching a commercial. I'm watching an Amazon commercial where an Amazon delivery driver with a giant, fluffy black beard is doing the commercial read. He's actually reading the voiceover through his mask. So you can't understand the mumbling through the mask. And then when they show his picture, he's got this giant beard and mustache smooshed down underneath this silly-looking mask. Anyway. So those of you who may not have any military training or any training in sanitary procedures, you can't have facial hair and wear a protective mask. It doesn't work. It's completely illogical and useless. But that doesn't matter anymore. Illogic and uselessness are that's not a part of the equation. I was talking to a civilian earlier in the week, and I walked in and she said, "Oh, do you have a mask?" And I'm thinking, what do you mean, do I have a mask? Everybody has a mask. We've been wearing masks nonstop for 4 months. Of course I have a mask. I'm just not wearing it. Oh, I just didn't know. Well, of course you knew. Like, walking into a place without a mask now is a political statement. Because everybody has a mask. And if you walk in without a mask, you look very strange. So anyway, I told her, you know, I've had this oral surgery and my face hurts. So I'm just going to forego the mask for today if that's okay. Showed her the bloody mess inside my mouth where the doctor had done the surgery. The only way you can get out of wearing the mask is to show someone an open, festering wound. Please, can I not wear the mask?
That's worse.
Right, it's definitely not worth it. So anyway, I told her, I said, so there's the extraordinary pain that I'm experiencing, which was a slight exaggeration since I really wasn't in any more pain. I just saw it as a useful vehicle for getting around wearing the mask. And I said, but then there's also the illogic of it. And she said, the logic? And I said, the illogic. It's illogical that we're all wearing masks. And then, but I told her, I said, you know what? I apologize. Logic is not popular anymore. I realize that now. Can I just get through this interaction and we'll part friends? I don't want to freak you out. And so I had to move on. Anyway, but we'll come back to all of that. Actually, maybe we won't. Scott Peterson, who murdered his pregnant wife, Lacey, and their unborn son, Connor, was sentenced to death with no chance for anything except death, except now that that death penalty has been overturned. And the court ruled that the trial judge in Scott Peterson's original sentencing to death for murdering a pregnant woman and an unborn baby, that judge made a series of significant errors. That's right. This is one lawyer overturning the death penalty of a convicted murderer because another lawyer was a lousy lawyer. Yes, yes, yes. Those lawyers, those incompetent buffoons at Scott Peterson's first trial, undermined his right to an impartial jury, and then they go through all what they did. And nowhere in the article does it disagree with the fact that Scott Peterson indeed murdered his pregnant wife, Lacey. And so at that point, once you're convicted of murder, the jury should be partial, right? They should no longer be impartial because now you're a convicted murderer. We've convicted you, now we should put you to death. But no, that's not. Anyway, so Scott Peterson, my prediction is at some point in the not too distant future, Scott Peterson will walk out of prison a free man. Okay, you think I'm crazy? You think that sounds crazy? Okay, well, we'll see. Mark my words. Meanwhile, to juxtapose to that, another mindless event, a meaningless event, I'm sorry, in a mindless system. Mark David Chapman, who shot and killed John Lennon December 8th, 1980, has been denied parole for an 11th time. That's right. His next parole hearing is scheduled for August of 2022. But for now, he's been denied parole, but he already gets to go home pretty much every evening to his mom's house. So I think the parole board is like pretty much, well, you know, you're practically free now. Do we really need to go through all the paperwork of setting you free? I mean, you're allowed to leave jail and go to the grocery store and go see your mom and drive your car around. I mean, isn't the rest just a formality, huh? All right, so Mark David Chapman remembers. Meanwhile, over at the insurrection, which continues, NPR had a, let's see, NPR is National Public Radio, for those of you who don't imbibe, and I do not. I don't listen to National Public Radio, and I only watch the Antiques Roadshow on public television. Oh, and sometimes the nature videos with the animals. I sometimes watch that. You have to sift through some of the evolutionary gobbledygook that they mix in, but the video can be really cool. They had, what was it? It was hummingbirds this past week. That was very impressive. High speed, high definition. Anyway, it was really cool. But other than that, NPR and public television are a cesspool of Marxist cult indoctrination, of which we do not imbibe. This past week, they had an interview with Vicky Osterweil, author of a new book, In Defense of Looting. That's the title of her new book, In Defense of Looting. You know, Well, how does she define looting? Looting is like mass shoplifting during like a riot. That's the thing I'm defending in the book. Wow. Unquote. That's what she says in the interview. Okay. So the NPR interview asks, can you talk about rioting as a tactic? What are the reasons people deploy it as a strategy? Says the, this is an NPR interviewer trying to sound smart, but actually showing that she doesn't know the difference between a strategy and a tactic. You see, a strategy is a long term. A strategy is made up of a series of tactics designed to achieve a long term. Never mind. I'm not going to try to describe it. Can you talk about rioting as like a tactic or like a strategy? And then the author, Vicky, says, well, rioting does a number of important things.
Oh, wow.
I'm sorry, looting during rioting. I'm sorry. This is a very deep, many-layered. She says it does a number of important things. It gets people what they need for free immediately. And in these communities, these are things which are often not available. So that is looting as a political mode of action. It also attacks the very way in which food and things are distributed. It attacks the idea of property. The idea that in order for someone to have a roof over their head or to have a meal ticket, they have to work. It points to the way in which that's unjust. So you demonstrate that without police and without state oppression, we can have things for free. Looting strikes at the heart of property, of whiteness, and of the police. It also provides people with an imaginative sense of freedom and pleasure and helps them to imagine a world that could be. You know, the world with that flat screen TV. The world with that Louis Vuitton bag. Riots and looting are experienced as a sort of joyous, I'm sorry. Let me slip back into my airhead. Riots and looting are experienced as sort of joyous and liberatory. This is right out of the lavatory. Anyway, so there it is. She strikes at the heart of property. The heart of the way in which food and things are distributed, at this unjust idea that in order to have food and a house, you have to work. So basically, this is an author publicly declaring that she's hell-bent against everything upon which civilization is built. And she's promoting that as an idea. Which, if I'm not mistaken, is illegal. It's illegal to advocate rioting and looting. You can't advocate criminal behavior. Oh, no, I'm sorry. You couldn't advocate criminal behavior before. But that's all changed since we've all decided, or at least a significant plurality of us, have decided to subjugate ourselves to the will of the cult leaders. Now, I know that sounds radical, but hang with me, okay? Because I think that we've all been recruited into a cult against our will, or not maybe against our will, but without our express knowledge and permission. And enough of us have decided to submit to it that that the cult leaders have moved in, and now they're changing everything that we thought was secure and firm and solid. It's all gone. You're now able to advocate looting in a book and publish that book without being arrested. It wasn't that way before. I'm talking just 6 months ago. It wasn't that way. It is now. Let's see. She has more here. She talks about the history of the movement for liberation in America. She says, the history of the movement for liberation in America is full of looters and rioters. They've always been a part of our movement. the interviewer asked her, what would you say to people who are concerned about, grocery stores and pharmacies in their neighborhoods being attacked and looted? I mean, there are people who are afraid of that. They're concerned about that. She says, well, small businesses, family-owned businesses, they're no more likely to provide worker protections. They're no more likely to have provided a good stuff for the community than big businesses. That's all a myth. A business being attacked in the community is ultimately about attacking like modes of oppression. Yeah, I didn't even put the like in there. The like is there. She actually said, a business being attacked in the community is ultimately about attacking like modes of oppression. Yeah. Okay. So she's going to publish that and not be arrested for advocating criminal behavior. And so it's getting to the point where public advocacy of some sort of physical suppression of this type of insurrection-type behavior is starting to need to be advocated. And we'll get to exactly how we're going to advocate or not for any and all of anything to do with anything to do with all that. View, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. As we say farewell to all things civilized, and for that, we go to the farewell speech, which was at the Republican National Convention this past week, which I never watched 1 minute of it, but I did see clips of one worthwhile speech. This is from the Civil War file. Ann Dorn delivered an address to the RNC, speaking through tears about her husband's death. On the night of his death, David Dorn responded to a burglar alarm at a friend's pawn shop in St. Louis after a nearby demonstration turned violent. Looters broke into the shop and killed David while live streaming his killing on Facebook. We all saw it. I did a whole show dedicated to David Dorn, and little did I realize then that we had actually reached a turning point in the history of our civilization. And I, like most turning points, like most watershed moments, you don't really realize until afterwards that that was the point. Most of the time, you don't realize. Anyway, Ann Dorn, the widow of Officer David Dorn, who was murdered during the riots, she says, quote, she said in her speech, quote, how did we get to this point when so many young people are callous and indifferent towards human life? This isn't a video game, she said. So, Mrs. Dorn, I feel for your devastating loss. But you ask, how have people become so callous and indifferent toward human life? Well, the video games might have something to do with it. I mean, and she mentions video games specifically. That might have something to do with it. But it's the wholesale slaughter of innocent human life that's going on every day in our neighborhoods, quietly, cleanly, very clinically and efficiently, that is more to blame than the video games. Although the video games don't help. And I don't want to say, I don't want to say anything against Ann Dorn. Her husband was murdered. But listen to this. Her daughters have spoken against Ann's decision to speak at the RNC. Wow. Deborah, one of Dorn's children, says it sends the wrong message. She's talking about her mother, the widow of her father who was murdered. She's actually, anyway, so this is why there is a soon coming a civil war. This is why. When the politics is so hot that it divides grieving family members against each other, then that means war. This means war. Yeah. This ends in nothing else but civil war. I know it's radical to say that. I take off your tinfoil hat, Doug, that things are going to be fine. You're just freaking out. Okay. More from NPR? Well, no, I want to go back to David Dorn because, again, I didn't realize we had passed a moment there. But the moment David Dorn was murdered, in my opinion, I realize now that any healthy, able-bodied male with the wherewithal was from that point forward obligated to rise up and violently kill rioters. So I think we have that right. I've had this discussion on Facebook with a few friends over this past week. When it came out about Kyle Rittenhouse, the 17-year-old in Kenosha, who, as far as we can tell, shot and killed at least, well, he shot three rioters, killing two of them, and badly injuring another. And the discussion is, well, were they an immediate threat? Were there other things he could have done? Shouldn't there have been an escalation of force? Perhaps he was justified. He's probably going to end up in jail. Was what he did wise? Well, there's all of that. And so I immediately, upon hearing that a 17-year-old had shown up at a riot with a rifle to defend private property, I immediately in my gut knew that that was the right thing to do. Okay, and if I'm wrong about that, I'm willing to admit I'm wrong, but I do not believe I am wrong. In fact, I felt a little sheepish that I hadn't picked up a rifle and gone and defended property. Because I think we all have not just a right, but an obligation. Now, I don't know enough about the Rittenhouse case to render a final judgment. All I'm saying is that the idea that a young man, a free American, shows up armed when there's a riot going on to defend private property, that's a good thing. That's all. But again, since the day Robert Dorn was murdered, any free American with the wherewithal has had the right, and I believe probably even the obligation, to go to the riots and start killing rioters. And people say, no, no, Doug, that's just what they want. That's what they want. They want us to rise up, and then they'll use that against us. Really? Well, a couple things. Did you notice how fast the riot around Kyle Rittenhouse ended as soon as he started shooting them? They all ran, and within 45 seconds, you could have heard a pin drop on that street. They didn't use anything against anyone. They ran for fear of their lives, which is what happens when you start shooting rioters. The riot ends immediately, which should have happened on night one in Minneapolis. It did not. So I had to find, obviously you can't just say things like this and not back them up with some scriptural, you need God, you need to agree with God. especially when you're talking about issues of life and death. So consider with me Abraham when Sodom was attacked, when Sodom was basically sacked and all the people were taken away captive and all the property was taken, and some of it was Abraham's. Abraham's nephew Lot was part of the people being carried away by the kings of the north. So Sodom was sacked and Lot was carried away by, well, I mean, they call them kings. I suppose they were, but keep in mind, folks, most governments throughout most of human history have been organized criminal enterprises. That's what most governments have been, organized criminal enterprises, illegitimately taking over the levers of governmental power that were ordained by God. That's pretty much been the history of human humanity from the beginning. And the organized criminal enterprises governing the Mesopotamia at the time, as well represented by the governments of Sodom and Gomorrah and the kings of the north, the Assyrians, and all of those who were involved in this account, this biblical account, by the way, that J. Vernon McGee calls it World War I. Is it seven kings against five? I forget exactly. Anyway, it's in Genesis. Check it out. So Lot is carried away. Sodom is sacked. All the property is taken away. Now, Abraham was not endowed with any governmental authority. He was just a civilian. Now, the kings who stole his family from him and the property from Sodom, they were governing authorities. But these were governing authorities who were no longer properly carrying out the responsibility of a governing authority. These were rogue governing officials kidnapping and murdering people. So now, after they did harm to an area near Abraham, this wasn't on Abraham's land or in his neighborhood, this was near him. And the property taken wasn't even his property, and just one of his family members was involved, right? And if you read the story, the kings who kidnapped Lot and sacked Sodom, they were headed back home. They were going back home to divide up the loot and the captives. They were no immediate threat to Abraham. So what did Abraham do? He took up arms and he put together a posse, so to speak, or a militia. And he went to the place where the people who had done him harm were going to. And he went to them and he hunted them and he killed them. And he took back his family members and the property. And God blessed Abraham for that. So when the governing authorities are no longer able or willing to provide peace and security, or if they're actively engaged in unrighteous and unholy violence against people, which is where I think we are now, the government's actually participating in this. I mean, when you tell the police to stand down during a riot, you're participating with the rioters. So I think any one of us would be justified in going to any city where there's riots, and when they start breaking things and smashing windows and starting fires, we would be justified. In fact, I think we're obligated to shoot and kill them in order to stop the riots. I mean, unless the police are allowed to do it, we need to do it. It needs to be done sooner rather than later. And so as of right now, I judge Kyle Rittenhouse as, call him a great American, I guess. I doubt there's anyone else in media willing to hang it out there and say, as of right now, I think this kid did what was right. And I mean, until some facts change my mind, I'm on his side. I think he did right and probably did more to quell the rioting in Kenosha, Wisconsin than anyone else has done to date. And we need a few of these in Portland and countless cities all over America. All right. So anyway, but instead, let's return to the other side, to the cult leaders leading the insurrection. In this case, the priests at NPR, the cult priests. They say that calling a riot, let's see, NPR published an article claiming that calling a riot, using the word riot is offensive because that word is rooted in racism. That, yes, the article was written by Jonathan Levinson over at NPR, and he was commenting on the fact that Portland has experienced 93 days of continuous rioting. Well, they had at least when this article came out on the 28th. That rioting that last Thursday night, there was a night when there was no rioting. Why? Because there was a rumor that armed federal troops were going to storm the streets. And these punks in Portland had just watched the video of a 17-year-old shooting and killing rioters in Kenosha, Wisconsin. That's what caused last Thursday night to be the first night without violence in Portland. Wow. That's what caused those two facts. That's it. Yeah. Yeah. That, in fact, that reminds me. I can't remember if it was Portland or Kenosha where CNN had the Chyron. So there's a reporter behind him. Things are on fire. Things are on fire behind the reporter. And the reporter is, I don't know what he was saying because all I saw was the visual because that's all you needed. But the Chyron, which are the letters at the bottom of the screen, by the way, it read, fiery but mostly peaceful protests. Fiery but mostly peaceful. You have to have been brainwashed by some sort of religious cult to actually put that on the screen. And then to not notice it would mean that you have been fully immersed in the jargon of the cult. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back as we bring it all together here, folks. We've been talking about the civil unrest, the civil war that's coming, the Black Lives Matter, the Antifa, the riots in the streets, the murders. And I wanna put that together here with the from the Big Delusion file. We've got a study on passengers. Let's see, a study on of a flight of 290 passengers found someone wearing a face mask still contracted COVID-19. That's right. And the scientists think that the person with their mask on caught it from an asymptomatic passenger on the flight. This is a South Korean study published by the CDC. Designed to identify possible dangers of air travel and the ease of transmission on an airplane. Imagine that. You're on an airplane with 200 other people breathing recirculated air, and it could be dangerous. You could catch a virus. Shocking. Anyway, listen to this. 310 passengers were scheduled to fly on this flight. 11 had symptoms and were not allowed on board. Each passenger was given an N95 mask, and the passengers and staff followed a strict protocol of masks. But six asymptomatic passengers tested positive at the start of the quarantine. After the plane landed, everybody went into quarantine. Six tested positive after the quarantine started. By the end of quarantine, one who had tested negative ultimately tested positive. Hey, there's just no way out. We're all going to get it. Everybody died. Well, no, actually, nobody died. As far as we know, nobody was even hospitalized. But we did find out that the virus could be transmitted on a plane, whether or not you had masks, whether or not you followed any of this or that or did this or got down on your knees and held up a fist and said Black Lives Matter with your mask on, keeping a 6-foot distance. Anyway, the conclusion of the study, here we go. So the conclusion of the researchers was that the person who ended up testing positive after testing negative contracted the virus from an asymptomatic passenger on the flight. Now, there's no hard evidence. There's no under any type of control to say that. That's just an assumption they make because, well, they have to make some assumption. She caught it from somewhere. So they just say it must have been an asymptomatic passenger, although we actually don't have any evidence of that. The researchers say further attention is warranted to reduce the transmission of COVID-19 on aircraft. First of all, COVID-19 is not transmitted. It's the novel coronavirus that's transmitted. You may or may not develop COVID-19, but none of that matters anymore. They've changed the language now to keep us scared. So now everyone who tests positive for this particular virus is it's COVID-19. So you immediately think they've got an air tube stuck down their throat and they're intubated. But that's not the case. But that's okay. It doesn't matter. No, logic, reason, accurate nomenclature, none of that matters anymore, folks. Because we're now participating in something far bigger than just Black Lives Matter or COVID-19 or coronavirus or lockdowns or quarantine, as people like to call it. I love it when people who use the word quarantine and pandemic, they were for it. They're the suckers who flinched. The people who use lockdowns, they're like me, who always thought all of this was insanely stupid. And hopefully like you. Although, if you were at first scared, I understand. You just need to come out and say, okay, you know what? I panicked. I'm sorry. I won't do that again. That's all. That's all we want to hear. Our results, the researchers say that their results suggest that stringent global regulations for the prevention of COVID-19 transmission on aircraft can prevent public emergency. Okay, so their study proved that you can't stop the spread, and then they say we need more regulations. We've just identified that there's really nothing we can do. So let's institute more. Let's see. The study did find it surprising that COVID-19 was spread to just one passenger, pointing to the effectiveness of face masks. Okay, really? Is it the face mask? Why? Was there another control group without masks to which you could compare it? Or maybe you just want to conclude that we all need to wear masks. Why don't you just come out and say, we just want you to wear masks, because that's what the priests at the temple say is wear the masks. All right. Anyway, by the way, I've been on 12 airplanes since February of this year, and I'm not dead yet. Although I could get sick and die, but I think I made clear earlier on that there's a possibility I could get sick and die. And I want you all to be prepared for that, okay? I could get sick and die. You could get sick and die, okay? So you need to deal with that reality right now. That way it won't freak you out so bad if you get sick. You can be psychologically prepared for the reality that there's a chance you could get sick and die. Try to man up and deal with that. All right, now we go to reason number 1,186 to get or keep your children out of government school. A survey in June over at EdWeek Research Center found that 81% of U.S. teachers support Black Lives Matter. That's right. I have a quote here from Michael over at the National Alliance of Black School Educators. I'm a superintendent at Crowley Independent School District in Texas. Michael says, quote, "We can't control what happens with the police, but we can control what happens in our school systems."
Gross.
This is the guy in control of what's happening in the school. And him and 80% of the teachers around him all support Black Lives Matter. And they're all deviants. I shouldn't say all. I mean, here, at least 80% we know are deviant perverts. If you support Black Lives Matter, you're a deviant pervert. Hell-bent on overthrowing the country. I'm sorry. There are no innocent supporters of Black Lives Matter anymore. You can't claim you don't really know what they're about. Because if you do, you need to get the hell out of the discussion. You're not qualified to participate in what we're talking about here. You're certainly not qualified in determining the outcome of all this. Please stand over there with the other people wetting their pants under the bed over the coronavirus. You go over there, we'll figure this out. We'll call you when your services are required again. Let's see. After a summer focused on updating curricula, millions of students will return to the classrooms, virtually or in person, with a focus more on Black history and experiences. Yeah, right. That's not what it's about. It's about mostly Marxist cult indoctrination. That's what it's mostly about. Have you noticed that? Did I talk about that last week, that all the commercials now? In almost every television commercial, there's either a homosexual, a person of color, or someone wearing a mask. Hey, I'm just pointing out a sociological fact, okay? For some reason, American business has been cowed to the point where they have to bow and scrape before the homosexuals, the people of color, and the people wearing their masks. It's depressing, that's all. You can't just have a regular commercial where people are having fun enjoying a product. Nope, it has to pander to some supposed oppressed minority, and it has to conform to the ideology of the cult. Speaking of the cult has been involved in queering America and the world for my entire adult life. And now Gucci, let's see, Gucci was at Milan's Fashion Week, and they dressed mostly male models in outfits that were actually the clothing of little girls and homeless women. Yeah. Designer Alessandro Michele. His showcase was called Deconstruction of Masculinity, through which he hoped to hint at, quote, non-toxic alternatives and the positivity of being strange. Yeah. Let's see here. What is designer? Is this a designer or is this, who is this? This is a fashion reviewer. What are the odds that a fashion reviewer has a lisp? a rather substantial lisp. A fashion reviewer at the Milan showcase for Alessandro Michele said, quote, in a patriarchal society, masculine gender identity is often molded by violent, toxic stereotypes. A dominant, winning, oppressive masculinity model is imposed on babies at birth. Unquote. All right, could you talk to me about the hem and the colors and the textures? I mean, I don't need to hear your theory on masculinity in America or the world. I wanted to know, did you like the clothes? Because I know you people have a talent for that. That's what I've heard. This oppressive masculinity, according to this fashion reviewer, quote, it condemns men to conform to an imposed phallocratic virility in order to be socially accepted. Toxic masculinity produces oppressors and victims at the same time. Okay, well, I don't even know what that means. Do you like that? Is that something that turns you on? I mean, anyway. The lisping, blogging, do I need to do any more of this? Anyway, he goes on to say, it seems necessary to suggest a desertion away from patriarchal plans and uniforms. Deconstructing masculinity as it has been historically established, unquote. Which is what Gucci did when one of his designers, Alessandro Michele, dressed up men as girls. And anyway, I'll post a link. You should see the pictures. It's really creepy and weird. Who's the doll I'm thinking of? I can't think of the doll. It's a redheaded doll with a checkered shirt. It was a girl. Little freckles. I can't remember, but anyway, he had a guy dressed up like that. All right. From the personhood file, we go to England, where a judge has given doctors permission to perform an abortion on a young woman who has severe learning disabilities. As of now, the source of the pregnancy is unclear, and I don't think it matters. That's not really the issue here. What is at issue is the decision of a judge and doctors in England to kill the baby. The decision to kill the baby was made by the Court of Protection in London. The Court of Protection, you say? The court specializes in cases involving people who lack the mental capacity to make decisions for themselves. Wow. That's kind of scary. I mean, that's a creepy Orwellian institution. I mean, what does it mean to be a person who lacks the mental capacity to make decisions for themselves? I mean, an evil, corrupt government hell-bent on murdering and enslaving people could pretty much shoehorn anyone into that definition. Well, you lack the capacity to make decisions for yourself, so we're going to have the Court of Protection protect you. And in this case, the court has decided the best way to protect the baby is to kill the baby. Anyway, they say that this young woman's lack of mental capacity makes it impossible for her to care for the baby. So doctors push to perform a surgical abortion, which would require the woman to be sedated and restrained. And that would be against her will, except the court has decided she has no will. She's lived in foster care most of her life. Her current foster parents support killing the baby, believing it to be in her best interest. In whose best interest? Not the baby's. Not the mother's. Is it in your best interest? I mean, you're foster parents. You can't take care of another baby. What? I don't understand. I don't comprehend these people. Anyway, according to a study published out of Flanders, Belgium, 89% of medical experts there express no reservation to ending the life of a baby with serious disabilities or birth defects. 90% of doctors in Europe, in Belgium? Wow. Ladies and gentlemen, this civilization is no longer civilized.
Where is the father?
Well, they don't know who the father is.
Well,
nobody knows. She's in an institution. They say it might have been someone else in the institution. It might have been one of her caretakers. Nobody knows. But that's beside the point. I mean, it would be helpful if there were a father present. Oh, there is a father somewhere. Anyway, it's just sick. Sick! So the decision in the best interest of the baby and the mother is to kill the baby against the mother's will. Talk about dystopian. That is the definition of dystopian. This is a civilization that's no longer civilized and quite possibly is deserving of merciless overthrow. I mean, that's where we're getting to, folks. We are now at a point where we are so uncivilized that we might deserve, well, exactly what we're getting, frankly. From the widespread humiliation file, I told you last week that I was going to try to uncover Marxist humiliation exercises and tactics that have been exercised throughout history upon people. And in doing my research, I discovered that humiliation is actually a tactic of cult leaders. And that led me to read deeper into what Marxism is, and Marxism is in fact a cult. It's basically a death cult worshiping the ideas of a charismatic leader named Karl Marx, who's now long dead and now assumes almost a messianic position along with others like Che Guevara and others who now are these cult figures. And the death cult is here, folks. The death cult, in fact, is upon us. And the death cult is forcing us to engage in humiliation exercises under the guise of a number of current crises, of which you will all recognize, but you may not have recognized that they were all part of the same web of cultic humiliation and manipulation. You may not have realized that until I put it all together for you right now. Don't give up, don't give up. see, that's one that you just can't interrupt until it brings itself to a natural conclusion. You don't want to break in on that. But speaking of a natural conclusion, folks, let's get right to it. Let's talk about the Marxist cult, the humiliation, and the overthrow of the country that is occurring right now, right before our eyes, and not even in slow motion. And not in secret, in front of God and everybody, wide open. So I found a story about Czechoslovakia back when the communists took over Czechoslovakia. In the early reign of the Marxists there, religious groups, civic associations, patriotic holidays, they were basically replaced over time with new ideological equivalents. The fabric of everyday life and all of the cultural norms that people had become used to were wiped away in a season, opening up a blank foundation upon which the party began to build basically a new communist normal. This is the new normal became the antithesis of what the people had known. They basically reshaped the environment to be true to Marx and Lenin and Pavlov, believe it or not. And this goes back to the story that I just talked about where they're about to murder this baby in England against this woman's will and say that it's for the good of everyone. And everyone's going to nod and go along with it as if, well, of course, this is the logical. 90% of the doctors in Belgium support this type of thing. So this is all based, the whole Marxist, the Black Lives Matter, the Antifa, the socialists, all these people who want to take down America, they could never do it without the ultimate delusion. Basically our neighbors, significant plurality, perhaps a majority of our neighbors have bought into the delusion that a baby is not a person and it can be disposed of for convenience sake. I'm sorry, I mean health and safety. That's what's really most important now, right, is our health and safety. Isn't that what your concern is for me, is with my health and safety? That's really what it's all about, right? Health and safety. So our normal life of freedom of movement, freedom of expression, has been disrupted now and replaced with the urgent need for us to care about everyone's health and safety. And if you resist this new normal, this new construct, if you resist it or express discomfort or disagreement with it, you don't care about other people's health and safety? Are you just selfish and concerned with yourself? You don't care? Have you noticed it? So let's go to the Chinese communists, because this is, so much of it is based on what they've done. The Chinese Communist Party has a specific approach and a mechanism, a vehicle by which they control the enormous Chinese population. You have to consider, how is it that a few thousand communist dictators and bureaucrats in Beijing can control a billion people? How does that happen? Well, it's done through a mixture of coercion and persuasion. Terror is used first. Terror is used first to establish control. Do you folks remember back in January, February, March, when there was basically a fear offensive launched by the media and the deep state, not just in America, but all around the world? Every day we were fed a steady diet of fear of this virus, bodies piling up, hospitals overloaded, we run out of ventilators, we'll have to decide who lives and dies. By the time March rolled around, there was a state of terror throughout the entire world, even though only a few thousand people had actually died from this virus. It's astonishing that people got that scared that quickly, but it happened. Do you remember how scary it was? So the terror offensive. And by the way, this goes the same for the cancel culture. right? There's this fear of losing your job, your entire career over one misstatement. One, you used one word the wrong way, you could lose it all. You have to worship the sanctity of the protest of systematic racism, institutional racism, whiteness. People are terrified and have been terrified for months about this cancel culture. So terror is the first tool that establishes control. Then mutual surveillance is established. Mutual surveillance, right? The social distancing, the masks. If you don't have your mask on, you get into a debate about it in a grocery store, before too long, you'll be surrounded by people who you swear if they had pitchforks, they would stab you for not wearing your mask. People are turning each other in for having parties. And so it goes from that goes from the virus to the riots and the cancel culture. Well, this is all part of the, you know, if you don't bow your knee to Black Lives Matter, if you don't say the words, well, we're going to tell on you. We're going to let the authorities know that you're not going along with all this. And then after the mutual surveillance society is created, then the deep state and the cult leaders, so to speak, the priests, the high priests, they devote their energy to propagandizing, educating, and indoctrinating. And this goes back to the commercials. All the commercials now, is somebody's either black or wearing a mask or a homosexual. Because now all of civilization now has to be permeated with this new normal. Right, the normal people are now expected to cower in fear, and the masters insist now that we have to elevate those who we've oppressed, which is the colored folks. All the commercials now, if you'll notice, the white person is the subservient, and the colored person is the one buying the Lexus or whatever. And not that I don't have anything against black people buying Lexuses, brown people, everybody, buy a Lexus, buy a Mercedes, God bless you. I'm just saying I've noticed how things have shifted. And then you got the commercials with the people with the masks. They're all concerned about your health and safety. Every store you walk into, every store and restaurant without exception has the Orwellian chart with the 6-foot distance and the picture of the mask. All the signs are in every single window. So the propaganda is everywhere. It is ubiquitous now. We've all been propagandized to the nth degree. And then the communists in China, they reinforce the idea that everything that people are forced to do is done actually voluntarily. That's right, we're all doing this voluntarily. In fact, the spectacle, the Chinese communists use the spectacle of people enthusiastically doing those things that are obviously in conflict with their own personal interests. The spectacle of the people enthusiastically participating is one of the most remarkable phenomena to observe in China. This was all written by a researcher back in 1956. This is from a paper for MIT. I'll publish a link to it. You can check it out. And so you see the people out there enthusiastically raising their fist at the restaurant when the Black Lives Matter guy gets in their face and demands it. Enthusiastically arguing that you have to put on your mask. What are you coming to the store without your mask? You want to make everybody sick? People are participating in their own harm enthusiastically. You have to support the homosexual agenda enthusiastically. You have to support the murder of innocent children with galas and award ceremonies and cheers. And with the coronavirus, I mean, basically, a significant number of Americans bought in enthusiastically with the idea that they were going to participate in the heroic storming of the beaches at Netflix. They were going to do it for their country. They were going to take some time off. We're going to lay around, eat potato chips, and watch Netflix. Why? Because we're patriotic. What they were actually doing when they volunteered to storm the beaches at Netflix for America was they were volunteering the destruction of their entire world for the fear of this scary narrative that they were all fed, that this was scary, terrifying, it was bodies were going to pile up. So for fear of that, they volunteered to destroy their entire world, which is happening right now. The world is being destroyed and taken from us by them. People dedicated to the communist indoctrination. And so as I went deeper into researching this psychology, I got into Lifton's 8 criteria for thought reform. See if you recognize any of these. This is from the Widespread Humility file. Research done after I realized that Marxism is a religious cult. We are being victimized by an organized religious cult that has achieved enough mainstream acceptance to now impose their will upon us. And as I said in an earlier show, whose fault is it? It's my fault. There should have been times I could have stood up against it. I could have loved my neighbor more perfectly. I could have averted this somehow. There surely were opportunities, and I failed. So going forward, I want to see things clearly so that I can make better decisions. And I can forego my own lusts, my own passions, and my own appetites to try to do what's right by my family and my neighbors so that we may, at some point, recover some of the old normal and liberate ourselves from the trappings that led to this. All right, number one in the Marxist thought reform is what they call it, thought reform. Milieu control, yes, the control of the information and the informational environment resulting in isolation from society at large. So folks, we've all been victimized by this milieu control. They've basically fed us the scary narrative. They've fed us the narrative of white supremacy and white guilt. COVID's going to kill you. You should feel bad about being white. A baby is not a baby. You can just discard it. We all got here because everything exploded and evolved from nothing. Huh? All of these seemingly disconnected streams of information have been successfully fed into the population now for generations. And this is the culmination of all that. And none of it could have happened without the big flinch before COVID and before the Black Lives Matter. The flinch of the average American male who was too scared of getting sick so that he basically offered the destruction of his entire world to avoid whatever he was scared of. And the running away of the police, basically, in the face of the riots. That was it. You remember, this was all tried back in 2014... 15, 16 with Black Lives Matter. They tried this, but it never went this far. Because now you had successfully humiliated and cowed the masculine population of the nation to the point where now there's nothing left to stop this. While everyone was wetting their pants in fear with their mask on, the Marxist cult took over, or are taking over, I should say. All right, so milieu control, they control your information and isolate you from society. We've all been isolated from one another. Mystical manipulation. Number two, yes, experiences that appear spontaneous, but in fact were planned by the group and its leaders to demonstrate divine authority that will then allow the leader to reinterpret events and experiences as he or she wishes. Yes. So, folks, scrap whatever you know about 5,000 years of civilized human behavior. Scrap everything we've ever known about infectious diseases. Forget all of that because now we know better. And the CDC and Fauci and all the minions in the media, they came on board with something totally new and different, but we were all told that this is the way it's got to be. And while the virus itself wasn't planned, the response to the virus was planned. I've pointed it out. I showed you the paper where it was written. I showed you the peer review from Fauci and who was the other guy from England with the 500,000 dead? Ferguson. I showed you. This was planned to a certain degree. It's just that they finally got an opportunity to put all or mostly all of it in place. Okay, so after your milieu control, your mystical manipulation, you have the demand for purity. That's right. Members are exhorted to conform and to strive for perfection. The indoctrination of guilt and shame is used. There's your masks, right? You're driving down the road. The big signs on the road say, masks save lives. Mask up, save lives. If you don't conform, you're made to feel guilty. Confession. That's right. Sins, as defined by the group, are to be confessed. Right? And so now you've got a battered and humiliated population, scared, wetting their pants with their masks on, now being asked to confess their sins of systematic racism, whiteness, white guilt, systematic oppression. And so they are. They are prostrating themselves. We move from confession into number five, the sacred science. The sacred science, yes. The group's doctrine is considered ultimate truth beyond all question. Mm-hmm. So can you criticize the CDC and their directives, even if they're contradictory? No, you cannot. Can you criticize Black Lives Matter or anyone who is a hue or two lighter than myself or yourself? No, you cannot. Can you question the idea that there's systemic racism that permeates America? Well, not if you want to trend on social media. And apparently not if you're an athlete. I don't know why. I don't know why they've gone so far in for it. I guess when you're that guilty about the fact that you throw a ball and make $5 million a year, I guess that can get to you. Anyway, then they go on to loading the language. Yes, the cult leaders use words and phrases in new ways. And this jargon consists of thought-terminating cliches that alter the members' thought processes. Well, I want to think about this. Well, wait a minute. Don't you care about other people's health and safety? Oh, health and safety. That's right. Health and safety now means you have to be committed in a religious sense to stopping the spread of this particular virus. And you're not allowed to argue with that. You're not allowed to argue with that. This is health and safety are number one, right? I mean, we all agree, right? Haven't we all agreed? What, you didn't think we'd all agreed? Well, we've all agreed. Then we have doctrine over person. Yes, personal experiences are subordinated to the sacred science. That's right. It doesn't matter what you experience or what you think is normal or your desires or what you believe to be true based on science that you might have heard of before we came along with our new science. Normal human interaction must be sacrificed because we need to stop the spread of this virus. You have to sacrifice your personal freedom of movement, your personal liberty, your personal ability to show your face in public. That all has to be sacrificed because we have to stop the spread. Why? Health and safety. Don't you care? We've all agreed we care about health and safety, number one. And then finally, there is the dispensing of existence. The group decides who has the right to exist and who does not. And this takes us all the way back to the not the cult of Karl Marx, but the cult of Margaret Sanger, the cult of Planned Parenthood, the cult of child sacrifice, the cult leaders that told us that despite what our own eyes and our own heart and our own conscience has known for thousands of years, a baby is not a baby and it can be disposed of. And the buying into that doctrine has led to all the rest of this. The cult of child sacrifice, the cult of evolutionary biology, those giant misinformation campaigns, disinformation campaigns? Nay, might I call them a conspiracy? Possibly. Was there more than one person involved in spreading the idea of the Big Bang and evolution? Well, there certainly was. Was there more than one person involved in postulating the doctrine that children could be killed and sacrificed without any consequence? Yeah, there was more than one. Do they all seem to agree with this Marxist cult-like religious fervor about everything from institutional racism, white guilt, wear your mask, kill the baby, go to a gay bar? How come they all agree? Because they're all a part of the same cult who has achieved, they haven't achieved. But at this moment in our society, they're on the come, so to speak. They've gained sufficient currency to be taken seriously by enough people that they are altering our civilization as we know it. And I think I've fairly effectively pointed out that we deserve it. We deserve what we're getting. But where there's life, there's hope, and we can always repent of those things that have caused us to get where we are. And we can look to God and guidance through His Word and through His Son that might take us to a point where we could be restored, at least to some degree. Chastened, but restored. Anyway, that's what I'm hoping to do with my next day. We'll take that one day at a time. We'll try to get through this. And in the meantime, I have all this other news that I wanted to get to, but I'll leave some of it for next week because a lot of this is hanging on. It's not going to go away. In fact, it's only going to get more intense. It's only going to get worse. And so there will be plenty to talk about in the coming weeks. What should I end with? Should I end with... I don't know. Let's see here. I want to go to Katy Perry since she's so influential. Katy Perry and her alleged fiancé have given birth to a baby. And for some reason, she's come out and said it's a baby girl. Obviously not conforming as expected to the cult of... what do you call it? You're not allowed to identify as a boy or a girl. That's part of it, too. Anyway, back in June, famous slut Katy Perry explained why her and her fiancé, she didn't have to explain why they were waiting to get married because nobody asked, because nobody cares about that anymore. But they were waiting on a name. So she knew she was pregnant. She knew she was having a girl. The reporters asked, what are you going to name the girl? And she said, we're waiting, because we're waiting. We have yet to decide specifically on her name, because I think she'll tell us what her name should be. And at that point, I'll look at her and I'll go, oh, yeah, yeah, you are her. You are that. So anyway, the baby's been born. I don't know if they named the kid her that, or I don't know. I don't know if Katie's still waiting to hear from the child what the child's name should be. Oh, no, I'm sorry. She named the child Daisy Dove Bloom. No word on the last name because the slut and her alleged fiancé are not married. Oh, Orlando Bloom is his name. She's given the child the father's name. Interesting. So, Katie, what are you thinking about? You're not really conformed to the cult yet. Not completely. That's okay. In the coming days, I'm sure she'll be brought around with a tweet storm of intensity against the fact that she had the audacity to say her child was a girl and then to give her child the girl's name and then to give the child the father's last name. That is so patriarchal. I have none of that. Katie, you better get back on the reservation. See, the thing is the wicked, as wicked as they try to be, they can't help but do things according to the way things are for real, ordained by God. They just can't help it. Now, she might get back around to trying to change it later, but you can see what she did initially, because she knows what's real. We all know what's real. Folks, that's it for the Weekly Worldview. I want to thank my friends at Real Science Radio and at American Right to Life, and of course my other brother Darryl, who makes it all happen. Here in the Weekly Worldview studio, should the Lord tarry, we will return next week. Until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.